welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. Thanks for joining us once again. This is one of those super-duper special episodes where Brandon and I are not doing a live show, but instead we pre-taped an interview, and we're going to share that with you today. We have an interview with Bicycle Touring Pro founder and operator Darren Alf. And so there's that. Also, just wanted to let you guys know, we have received a donation from Susan down in Plano, Texas. She sent us a very generous donation, and I think I told you, Susan, that was going to go to pay for guests and their beer. But I think, actually, I already spent the money on an upgrade for software that we use to produce the show. So it's been used, and you're hearing the results right now. So anyways, thank you so much, Susan. We appreciate it. If you'd like to make a donation to the Sprocket Podcast, you can do that at thesprocketpodcast.com. There's a little PayPal button on the right-hand side of our website. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com, and our phone number is 503-847-9774 if you'd like to leave a message on our message line. Well, like I said, Brandon and I are probably, as you hear this, out on the road, riding around and visiting folks up and down the I-5 corridor in the Pacific Northwest. But we will be back in August for another series of live shows. I believe our first guest is going to be Rob Sadowski of the BTA, which is the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. We're looking forward to talking to him. And we've got a whole other crew of folks that are going to be swinging through our studios and talking to us and recording shows for you to listen to and be entertained and informed by. So we look forward to bringing those to you. In the meantime, I have a couple of news headlines that I'll share with you, and then we'll get to our pre-taped interview with Darren Alf. So here is your news headline segment for today.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the night light.
First up from bikeportland.org, there's an article here about a fellow named Joe Hand, who is taking the issue of people who are not stopping at a prominent stop sign issue place in Portland, the Ladd Circle. It's a fantastic, beautiful place, but there's a lot of debate over whether people should be stopping on their bikes or not. I won't get into the ethics or the morality of that right now, but I do want to share the story of Joe Hand, a Colorado native who came to Portland to attend Reed College and then stuck around because he loved it. He is fighting some of that stop sign hatred with kindness, and he baked 100 chocolate chip cookies, stood at the intersection of Southeast Ladd Avenue and Ladd Circle during bike rush hour, and had a sign that said stop for a free chocolate chip cookie. And I would say it's kind of like pumping your fist in the air at someone that you might not get along with and just saying best day ever. It's a response of absurdity or kindness to adversity. And Joe, you sir, are a fantastic person for that. Bike Portland also brings a story of a man named S. Brian Wilson. He is the author of a book, Blood on the Tracks, The Life and Times of S. Brian Wilson. And that's Wilson with two L's, not like the Beach Boys guy. But Brian Wilson is a prominent anti-war activist and a veteran of the Vietnam War. He lost his legs in a peace protest some time back, and he has taken up hand cycling, which is basically a bicycle that you pedal with your hands, your arms. And I believe I've seen this guy rolling through my neighborhood. I've always wanted to talk to him, but it sounds like I'll have to wait a little bit longer because he is embarking on a 1,100-mile hand cycle journey that will take him through Oregon and California. And he's promoting that new book, Blood on the Tracks, The Life and Times of S. Brian Wilson. The guy has a fantastic story and it seems like an all-around good fellow. So we'll send you a link for that as well. The Green Garbage Project is a fascinating project that I've been following for some time. They're talking about all manner of simplifying and waste-reducing options. One thing they wrote about recently is switching from a gas-powered lawnmower to a push-reel mower. Which is something I use, and almost every season of the year, except for when the weeds start to bolt and get huge, that works out really well. So anyways, they have a fantastic article kind of talking about that whole project. Lastly, bikeportland.org gives us an article about a fellow who is dreaming of free mobile rock shows by bike. Brian Smith, he's an East Portland resident, and he's launched a Kickstarter campaign, hoping to raise some money to fund the Tall Tour live music project. And Bike Portland says, in a nutshell, the Tall Tour is a bike-based rock show that rolls the streets of Portland on tall bikes, putting amps, mics, cords, and instruments in trailers, and playing gigs at parties, rides, and festivals, or whenever the mood strikes. So this sounds like a fantastic project. I'm looking forward to seeing how this works out. Looks like they were a part of the East Portland Sunday Parkways ride that Brandon and I and a bunch of our friends were also part of. So hopefully I can bump into them soon and see what this Tall Tour is all about. All right, with that, I leave you to our pre-taped interview with Darren Alf of BicycleTouringPro.com. Oh, happy to.
Yeah.
Hola.
Hey there, how's it going?
Good.
Excellent. Let's see. This is, to my right and your left, Brandon Rhodes.
How's it going?
He's my co-host, or perhaps I'm his co-host, one of the two.
You guys have awesome facial hair.
Thank you. We live in Portland. It's a requirement. They kick you out at the border if you don't have one. So,
yeah. Women included, even, actually.
That's the scary part.
That must make it hard.
Yeah.
It's one of the best audio connections on Skype we've had.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, it's very clear. You must have broadband.
Yeah.
None of that, but
after coming back from Peru, I'm paying like premium prices now for internet because
right.
Internet was so bad that yeah. I was like, I want the best you got.
Right. And that's why we didn't do this earlier, right? It was because like you couldn't find a place that was any faster than like 56K or something.
Right, so. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and what's surreal is when you go there and see like World of Warcraft on the internet cafe things, it's like, how would you play anything like that?
Right.
On like dial-up speed.
Right. It's more like playing chess through mail or something.
Yeah. Oh, we should get the sound. We always intro somebody with a sound effect. So that's
we do. Yeah. I don't have that hooked up.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Damn.
Yeah,
oh, well.
There's so many
you have
wires.
To hum or something in the
right,
background.
Right, exactly. There we go. That's your fanfare. We are talking to Darren. Is it Alf? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, okay. Like the TV show.
Right, right. Okay, just an extra F at the end.
Correct.
Darren Alf of BicycleTouringPro.com. We're glad to have you on the line with us here on TheSprocketPodcast.com. It's great to talk to you finally. You're just fresh off of, was it 6 months in South America?
Yeah, five. I was planning to be there for 6 months, but I came home a month early just because I was ready to come home.
Right.
Which happens sometimes when you travel.
Travel fatigue. You know?
I didn't quit. I just came home early.
Sure. Well, there's a good distinction between those two.
Because
winners never quit and quitters never win. I was thinking it would be interesting maybe to start with maybe your first bicycling experiences, like perhaps when you were a child. Did you get a bicycle for Christmas? Or what? How did you initially get into the world of bicycles?
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of where I'm different from a lot of cycling people, or bicycle tourists, I should say, is that I started really young. I started bike touring at 17 and right out of high school. And I cycled from Oregon to Mexico down the Pacific coastline, which is a popular route. Didn't you do that route?
Yeah, I actually did that.
2009?
2009, yeah. My wife and I did that one from Bellingham, right up by the Canadian border, down to San
Ysidro. Okay, so you did the whole thing.
We did.
Yeah. And anyways, so I figured this would be like a big thing that I would do after high school. I'd do this bike tour once. I'd go off to college and get a job and do the traditional sort of thing. After that first bike tour, I did go to college, but I was sitting in class, and all I was thinking about was that bike tour and how I was going to do another one.
That sounds very familiar.
Right. Well, we wouldn't be doing this show probably unless you were somewhat excited about bicycle touring, right?
True enough. And there's kind of a bug that you get bit by.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Gets into your blood.
Yeah. And so I spent my college years every summer. I would go on a long-distance bike tour, and they were all in the United States. And what is it now? It's 2011. So this year was my 11th long distance trip that I've done.
Congratulations, sir.
Over the last 11 years, I guess. And I don't know how many miles that is. I stopped keeping track after 2 or 3 years.
There we go.
Because I figured nobody really cares anymore, you know?
Right.
But that's how I got started was I was 17 years old, about to go off to college, and I said I want to do something big and crazy before I settle down into the real world.
There you go.
11 years later, I'm kind of still doing big and crazy stuff, I guess, to a certain extent.
Found that the real world wasn't really all it was cracked up to be, and you might as well have some more fun doing other types of things.
Yeah, well, now I try to mix my big and wild adventures with the real world. That's right. Kind of my, you know, kind of get a little balance.
Making them viable, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm working while I'm traveling now, which is something a few years ago I wouldn't have even dreamt about, and a lot of people wouldn't have dreamt about, probably. Yeah.
Do you want to maybe tell us a little bit about being self-employed? Because that's basically how you roll and how you make it possible to kind of do the adventure living kind of concurrently with the just the real world experiences.
Right. Well, yeah. For me, being self-employed, it all started about 5 years ago. I was working in Hollywood as a sound mixer on like short little films and stuff, and I just took a weekend trip to Utah, and I came into Park City, which is where I live now. It's like a resort town. There's three ski resorts and stuff, and I just pulled into town. I was like, I'm moving here. So I dropped my whole life in Southern California and moved to Utah with no family, no friends, no job, no plan, you know. And yeah. I basically at that point started working out of my home. I was doing direct mail marketing and a bunch of stuff like just marketing related stuff. And then I started playing with websites. And it was around that time that I started building Bicycle Touring Pro, which is this website I have now. That yeah. teaches other people how to do bike tours,
which is like a pretty fantastic resource. I've been following it for I would say about a year or so. I think I was reading it in preparation for my solo tour. The first one I did alone was last summer, and you had all kinds of resources on there that were pretty amazing and helpful. What could someone expect to find on bicycletouringpro.com?
Well, a lot of stuff, I guess. There's over 500 articles, free articles about bicycle touring, whether those be stories from the road, gear reviews, how-to articles on how to pack or what to pack and how to plan your route, et cetera, et cetera. I also have a number of like information products, books and stuff about how to do long-distance bike tours or buy the perfect touring bike. Interviews with other cyclists and all sorts of kind of stuff, bicycle touring oriented. So yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. There was one in particular I remember reading, just the idea of going to a place that's super cold, is kind of, I don't know. I don't do well with cold weather. And so, I was kind of reading it to kind of avoid myself having the personal experience and see what it's like. But you wrote some excellent pieces about being in East Europe.
In 2009, maybe the same time that you were doing your trip, I was cycling through Europe. I was there for 9 months and I cycled through Switzerland, Germany, Austria in the winter time. So that's probably what you're referring to, I imagine.
That's what I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Snow in the Alps, and yeah, it was very, very cold. That's not for beginners, I don't think.
You don't recommend that be someone's first tour then?
No, definitely not. Summer, I mean, bicycle touring kind of is a summer sport, you know, and people wait for the weather to be nice and then they hit the road. You can travel in the winter, but I think it takes a little more experience and you got to be able to put up with a little bit more pain because. Right. That cold is definitely something to deal with.
Yeah. So. What did you experience there? What was the, what were the factors, the temperature, weather?
The weather varied incredibly. Like there were times when I would go out and be nice and warm and I was perfectly fine. And other times I was cycling through snow. I couldn't see 2 feet in front of me. And I was wearing full-blown ski gear, basically, is what I was wearing on the bike. I mean, ski pants, a ski jacket, full goggles, ski gloves. There was no cycling apparel whatsoever, except for my shoes, maybe, to clip into the bike. But other than that, I mean, I looked like a skier on a bike.
Right.
You know?
Which I suppose was, at certain points is essentially what you were.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, in Europe, there's a lot of people that ride bikes in the wintertime. It's very common, but they are typically just riding like to their work from their home
in the city.
In the city, yeah. So as soon as I got outside the cities, people would look at me like I was nuts.
Oh, you're just American.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was kind of nuts, but no, it was awesome, and I would do it again. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad.
What went first? Was it the toes, the hands, your face?
Oh, yeah. Toes and hands, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Was there any way to combat that, or was it just something you just kind of had to accept and embrace?
Yeah, accept and embrace, I think. I mean, camping was the worst because I started the trip without a sleeping pad or anything.
Wow.
And so I was just sleeping on the ground, on the snow, intense. Basically. That's not smart. So I quickly bought a pad.
There you go.
But anyways, yeah.
Good work. The South American adventure, how did the idea germ for that in your mind? What gave you kind of the initial thoughts?
Well, since I've started bike touring, like every tour I've done, I've tried to do something different on it. Like there's been something like my fifth bike tour, I brought a skateboard with me and I rode from Vancouver down to into California again, but I stopped at like every skate park along the way and skateboarded.
That's awesome.
But you know, other bicycle tourists would see me carrying the skateboard and they'd say, "Oh, you're doing it wrong."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
that's my least favorite phrase.
Right. And I'd say, well, I mean, that's kind of been my thing, is like, I've been purposely trying to do bicycle touring wrong for the last 10 years. Yeah, exactly. And so, this trip to South America, I wanted to experiment with traveling without a bicycle at all. Without my own bicycle, I should say, because all of my previous trips, I had brought my bicycle with me. So for this trip to Peru that I just came back from, I went without a bike with the plan of renting or potentially even buying bicycles along the way. And it turned out to be a whole lot harder than I thought it would be.
Uh-huh.
Renting a bicycle wasn't necessarily a problem. In major cities like Lima or Cusco or Juarez, these are the big tourist destinations in Peru. They had modern like mountain bikes for rent that you could get for a somewhat reasonable price. But in other cities, there were no bike rentals. And if there were bicycles at all, they were like Walmart bikes, basically, like a bike that you would buy for $60
like
or something.
Huffy.
Yeah, with, you know, really cheap parts. And so I did rent a few of those while I was there, but it was kind of scary because I rented the thing and they would give you no helmet, no pump, no spare tube, you know what I mean? So if you had any sort of mechanical breakdown, you were pretty much screwed.
Yeah.
And so that didn't work out quite as well as I thought, but when I was in Puno, Peru, which is on the edge of Lake Titicaca, I bought a tricycle taxi cab.
Yeah, we told people about that on our show when you put your post up about it, just because we thought it was such a both a crazy idea and it sounded awesome, you know, if it worked. So
right. Well, yeah. So I bought it's like a two-person car, basically. Like you can carry two passengers and then there's a cyclist in the back that pushes these two passengers.
Okay.
They're single speed tricycles and they're pieces of junk, basically, like brand new. They sell for like $300, and I bought a used one that had multiple things wrong with it for $90.
Wow.
And I rode the thing for 3 days before it broke down and I was unable to repair it.
Right.
were you going down trying to get to Arequipa or?
I was trying to get to Cusco, which is about 250 miles away through the mountains.
And on a single speed.
It is at least downhill.
True.
Overall
true.
There.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, when I did that, I knew that this was going to be probably the hardest thing I'd ever attempted to do as far as bicycle touring goes. But I also knew that if I could accomplish it, it would be like the greatest thing I ever did.
Right. You could spin off a whole new website.
Unfortunately, I only made it 3 days.
You start tricycletouringpro.com.
That's it.
Right. Yeah.
So when you finally broke down, were you out in kind of the middle of nowhere or...
Yeah, it was exactly in the middle of nowhere.
Precisely so, right on the spot. So what did you do at that point?
Well, on the front of the bike, they had like motorcycle wheels. And this was the part of the problem. I couldn't repair it. I had a flat tire in one of these motorcycle wheels.
Ah.
And I didn't have the necessary tools to fix it. And so I ended up giving the bicycle away to like a poor farm family that was living out there just off the side of the highway, basically.
Yeah.
And told them that my bicycle had broken down and that I was trying to ride it to Cusco, but that I'm going to continue on foot and that they could have my bicycle. And I mean, this is a family that had like no running water, no electricity in their home. Like they had like two llamas, a cow, and a bunch of chickens. And nice. That was pretty much it, you know? So I'm telling them that like, I'm basically like giving them a used car for
yeah.
free,
yeah.
you know, and they couldn't believe it. And also like, I'm trying to communicate this in Spanish to them because they don't speak any English and I don't really speak any Spanish. Or I was trying to learn, but I was really terrible.
Yeah.
So I'm telling them that like, you know, I'm riding my bicycle, but it's yours. You can have it. It's free, you know? And,
yeah.
And just to see their expressions on their faces was maybe worth more than what I paid for the bike in the first place. So it was just even though it was like a failed trip in many ways, it was an awesome experience and I would do it all over again in a heartbeat.
Sure. So. Well, I'm not sure if I would call it failed just because the idea that you took a machine of that size and those dimensions for a 3-day trip is actually pretty impressive to me. Yeah. So good work, sir.
At 11,000 yeah. feet, no less. Yeah.
True enough. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Did you have a hard time getting enough oxygen with something like that?
Actually, I didn't really notice the oxygen problem at all when I was in Peru. I mean, I live at like 8,000 feet right
now.
Oh,
that's right. You're yeah. So you're already like a tankard of a man. You're so much stronger than
somewhat acclimated. Sure, the elevations in Peru though are extreme. I mean,
is it Puno at like 13 or 12,000?
Yeah, I think it's like 12,500 yeah. feet. Yeah,
yeah. Brandon actually went down there. Was it three years ago?
3 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I didn't do bike touring. I was on the buses, but
yeah,
right.
But well, I know that route between itself. Cusco and Puno. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. How long were you there?
Just 1 month.
Okay.
Yeah, the lady I was dating at the time, her family lived in Lima, so we traveled all around for 3.5 weeks. It was great.
Wow, and where else did you go?
We did, let's see, from Lima to Cusco, and then took the bus. We flew there, and then from Cusco to Puno, went out to one of the islands on the lake, and then down to Arequipa, and what was it, Pisco, and then back to Lima.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. Awesome. We were in Pisco 8 months after that the 8.0 earthquake they had.
Oh yeah.
So that was unreal. I mean, the only buildings that were left standing were ones with rebar in it. Everything else, every brick building was flattened.
Yeah, I bet.
A cultural shock for sure. Anyhow.
Yeah.
Did you eat guinea pig while you were down there?
Well, no.
No?
I'm vegetarian.
Oh, there you actually. Go. Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, food in Peru was difficult for me, and food on my bike tours in general is pretty difficult for me sometimes. And oftentimes finding the food is not difficult, but explaining to people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, why I'm vegetarian or what vegetarian actually means. You know, are you guys vegetarian or no?
Only when I'm not eating meat.
we kind of swing in that direction. Just, I mean, my wife and I, when we buy our food, we tend to buy a lot of like rice and beans and that sort of thing. Just
mm-hmm.
mostly because it's cheaper, but also because it's, if I do eat meat, I like to know that it, you know, I like to know which animal it came from, that it was well treated and
right.
that sort of thing. And that's hard to know when you're buying it at the supermarket. So,
yeah.
Although I can't speak with absolute guiltlessness because I did have 2 corn dogs for lunch today after returning home. So. So yeah, I am a flawed person, but I'm doing my best.
Phrase we use in Portland is either dignitarian, the animal was treated with dignity, or flexitarian, or we'll try and have high standards, but we aren't going to be dogmatic.
Right. Also freegan, which means like if I didn't buy it and it's just sitting there, I'll probably eat it. So yeah, there's all kinds of...
when the party at the other table at the restaurant gets up and leaves half a cheeseburger... Damn right I'm going to eat it.
That's when I swoop in, yeah.
Yeah, that definitely. Cow died in vain. I will not let it die in vain.
Yeah, I would imagine especially in South America when you were there, the language, not necessarily a barrier, but the cultural differences probably presented some difficulties when you were trying to find food that was acceptable for your diet.
Yeah, I mean, not only in Peru, but everywhere I go. I mean, even in Europe or something, I have the same problem. But when you're adding that on top of not being able to communicate in their language, that's extremely difficult. I mean, I just knew enough to say no carne, you know, or
no pollo, no beef.
Yeah, these few words, few important words.
Indeed.
But that's sometimes all you need to know.
So I would imagine culturally, being able to camp on the side of the road or in a field or something is it easier there because people are less uptight about property lines? I mean, that's maybe a caricature that as a North American I have of those cultures, but I know up here you got to be creative and thoughtful if you're going to be sort of hobo camping on somebody's private property.
Right. Well, there were a number of things that I think bothered me about Peru, but one of the things that I loved about Peru and so many other places in the world is exactly what you're talking about, is their freedom of inviting people in and basically allowing you to do more maybe than what we are allowed to do here in the States. People are more wary of lawsuits and property lines, as you talked about. So it's very strange coming back from a place where, like in Peru, I felt like I could, if I wanted to, I could pay to surf on top of a taxi cab or something. You know what I mean? Like they would have no problem with that.
Like all the rules.
You'll
are
see
off.
Bags of chickens on top of city buses. You see the weirdest shit.
Right. But
live chicken, you know, dish it.
But you get back here into the States and you step on someone's, lawn or something, and you got the police on you.
Right.
You know, a couple blocks down or something. So
is that what it's like in Park City?
No, but I feel like it is sometimes.
Okay, yeah. I imagine their neighborhood association is probably pretty good.
Yeah.
I was kind of curious just about simple living in general. We're all about finding creative ways to enjoy what we call the good life. Being able to do that maybe for less money and less impact on the earth than that means for some people. Like the American dream, as it stands, kind of in general, is like you get a huge house and you get a bunch of stuff, and then and you spend a lot of time taking care of that. But what does the good life and the simple life look like for you?
For me, I mean, my goal is basically to be able to live, work, and travel anywhere. And at the moment, that means anywhere that has an internet connection, because so much of what I do is internet-based. But
Right. Hopefully
I can break away from that as well, because there are a lot of parts of the world that don't have these fast internet connections, which I learned in Peru.
Right.
And I need to figure out a way to work and travel in those sorts of environments as well. But for me, well, one of the things I guess I learned on this Europe trip that I was talking about previously in 2009, I did that trip 9 months, and I got home and I had 70% more money in my bank account than when I had left.
Like it was more economical to travel than to stay home.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I came home with more money, and this was in Europe, which most people, think Europe is extremely expensive, and they save up for years to go to Europe or whatever. And I think that's one of the big things that very few people realize until they do it, is that the travel is really cheap, actually. And it is oftentimes cheaper than just staying at home and doing nothing.
Yeah. You had a fascinating breakdown after you returned to the States from Peru about, I think you broke down expenses by category and just gave the amounts and all that. And I was fascinated, like the amount of things that you did. It seems like, especially if you were doing that kind of on the beaten American tourist path, that you would spend a mint trying to get all that stuff done. But
absolutely.
But not so.
No. I mean, when I was in Peru, like I didn't even scoff at the prices at all. Like I didn't really barter, or try to haggle my prices down. But if I did, I could have done the trip for a whole lot less. The whole 5 month trip cost me less than $5,000, which if I sat at home, my mortgage on my condo here in the United States is just over $1,000. Wow. And that's just the mortgage.
Right.
Not to mention food and entertainment and transportation and everything else.
Yeah.
So that trip through Peru really, I made money while I was there for sure, you know? And I think a lot of other people can do that too. They just, they aren't aware of it, or they've never tried, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And you also, rent your condo out when you're away. Is that right?
Right. Well, that's, I mean, part of living in Park City, this resort town where I live, it's really easy to rent my condo out. It's really high demand. Unfortunately, other people don't live in areas where it's so easy to rent out your property. But this is part of my lifestyle design, I guess, is, you know, being in a place that I can just pick up and leave anytime I want, basically.
Right. And you can kind of guarantee that someone will want to be there if you are not.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking to our friend Adam Rust and Jody Rust. They came and they were on a show earlier, and they do the same thing. He's, mm-hmm. I think, a real estate agent, but whenever they hear of someone that wants to come into town, they have a nice, huge house up in Northeast Portland. It's really close to a bunch of cool things that people might want to do if they're visiting Portland from out of town. And so, if someone ever sends in a request like, "Hey, I'd like to rent your house," the Rust are like, "Hey, we're going on a vacation." You know, sometimes
right.
with
take
like,
the train up and see their families up in Washington, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like on a week's notice or something like that. And, yeah, I guess if you have the flexibility and you can work that into your schedule, it's a pretty nice deal.
Yeah. I mean, that's opposite of how most people operate. You know, they save and plan up to take this vacation, and your friends and myself, I guess, we let the vacations come to us, basically.
That's great.
I like that. I like that. We should, you know, I'll give you first dibs on that if you want to, you know, bicycletouringpro.com. Let the vacation come to you.
Hey,
trademark or something like that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
If you don't, I'll start some sort of web business about with that as the tagline. I was going to ask you maybe before we wrap up. You had an interesting article about a long, long run that you took with absolutely no training whatsoever.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's actually how these bicycle tours got started. Is when I was in high school, I was on the track team for my school. I was the first person at my school to run 4 years of varsity track.
Nice. Woo. Congratulations, sir.
Nobody cares. It's not important. But
not a man, nay.
A god.
Yeah, yeah. But so anyways, people called me Forrest Gump. The movie came out, you know, when I was in junior high school or whatever. And so people called me Forrest Gump in high school because I was running all the time. Yeah. And as my high school graduation was approaching, I was talking with one of my friends and he said, "What are you going to do after you graduate?" And we were talking, and then he just threw out this wild idea. He said, "You should run across the United States like Forrest Gump." and we all laughed about it at the time. But then I kept thinking about it going like, yeah, maybe I should run across the United States. So to make a long story short, I decided after a while that I wasn't going to run the United States, but that I was going to bike it because I could carry the stuff I needed. It would be a lot faster, cheaper, et cetera. So that's how the bicycle tour came about. And since then I still like to run, but I haven't been doing maybe as much of it as I'd like to over the last couple of years.
Okay.
So what you're talking about here is last summer, I just woke up like on a Friday and I was just thinking like, oh, today would be a great day to go for a run. And one of my goals all my life has been to run a marathon, but I've never actually done it. Like I've done long distances, but never, you know, a straight marathon where I didn't stop running for 26.2 miles or whatever.
Right. And that point and so, too, is that that's the clincher right there.
Right. So I woke up on that Friday. I said, "I'm going to run a marathon today." And we have, with no training, I literally had not run in like 3 years. And that's, so I just went out to a local trail and put some music on my iPod, you know, and started running. And kind of like my tricycle story in Peru, I didn't quite make it. But I think I made 21 miles before I couldn't feel my feet anymore.
That's not bad.
Yeah. But I guess that's what makes me kind of different from others is like I come up with these wild ideas and some people like to talk about them, but I actually do it. Whether I make it or not, I'm going to try it, you know?
You're not like other people, are you, Darren?
No, I don't think so. Maybe I am. I don't know.
I think you may be more like what we all want to be than some of us would let on. Did you end up getting a ride back home in a police cruiser at the end of that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I ran the 21 miles and then I was stuck. Like the trail runs between a highway or a freeway, basically.
Okay.
And the only way to go back the 5 miles back to my car, essentially, was to walk. And I was dead tired It was getting dark. And so I ran up onto the freeway and I was trying to hitch a ride with somebody passing by. And whoopsie, a cop car pulled me over with my thumb out here. Yeah. And anyways, but he was very nice. And I just told him I had run 21 miles and he gave me a ride all the way back to my condo, which was pretty, pretty nice of him.
What a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic. What does one put on an iPod to kind of stimulate an impromptu marathon?
Oh, geez. Well, you're asking about particular bands?
Oh, sure.
Lately, I've been listening to this, I think it's called Versa Emerge. Have you ever heard of them? I don't know. It's
we'll have to look them up.
I really don't know much about the band. I like the music. I feel like I'm in a horror movie or something, and I'm like running away from the bad guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Gives
you some impetus.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways,
fantastic. Well, thank you, Darren. Would you please promote and plug your online presences for us so people can know where to find you?
Yeah, totally. My bicycle touring website is bicycletouringpro.com, and if you are interested, I guess in my pictures from Peru and stuff, I've posted them on my personal website, which is darrenalf.com. I don't know if I should spell that. But anyways, sure.
Just Alf with two Fs.
Yeah, correct. So
yeah,
thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
You've also got a motorcycle touring website as well?
Yeah, well, it's just a sort of back burner project at the moment.
That's kind of in beta.
I just started motorcycling like 2 years ago, and so I'm doing some short tours and just kind of sharing what I've learned and things like that. So yeah,
nice. Very good. Well, we appreciate it, sir. If someone needed a webmaster, would they contact you as well?
Yeah, I do some of that stuff as well, too. Yeah. Yep. I have a marketing website. You want me to give all this out? You're making
sure,
me list like I have like 20 websites here.
Oh, okay. Well, whichever you find most relevant, but we'd be happy to provide the exposure.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, I have a small marketing company. I help people with their marketing stuff online. So my website is silvermountainmarketing.com. Silver Mountain Marketing.
All right.
So, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you spending some time with us. It's good to meet you. Good to talk to you in person. Thanks for being flexible across time zones. And we'll look forward to connecting with you some other time.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Cheers, awesome. Darren.
Ciao.
Fantastic. And that wraps up our interview with Darren Alf of BicycleTouringPro.com and all of his other mini websites. Wanted to let you know, too, if you guys are interested in submitting independent music to us, we're always interested in hearing about new bands and musical acts that we could feature in musical breaks in the show. Once we get back to our live show, we're hoping to get back to the 2-segment format. I do have, I've got a reserve of some of my friends that I know, but I certainly don't know everyone. So if you know an independent musician and they have music that you like, please let us know about that. And we can try and get in touch with them and perhaps feature some of their fine music on our show. All right, without further ado, we're going to wrap this one up. Just wanted to let you guys know you can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program and suggestions for topics, guests, or drinks, or anything else. Our email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a message about your bikey life or your simple adventures. It's 503-847-9774 to get to our message line, or you can text it. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. You can find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder. You can find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
And until Brandon and I return to Portland and producing regular shows, we wish you the happiest of summertime adventures. Looking forward to talking to you again soon. Cheers.